Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
And welcome to another episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. Today's guest, well, I'm just delighted that she said yes. She is a journalist and an author. I love all of her books. So does my dad, interestingly enough. It is Paige Toon.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Thank you.
Good, good, good. You have two children.
Let's start there. Yes. A 7-year-old and one who's about to turn 10.
So you're more advanced than I am.
I'm definitely a few years on.
Does it get calmer? Tell me it gets calmer.
It does. I'm going to reassure you here. It gets so much easier as they get older. But every age just has so many, you know, wonderful new experiences, you know, it's lovely.
The good and the bad?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely a bit of bad in there too. We haven't quite, I think someone said to me recently, this is the golden age, you know, before they become teenagers.
Really?
You know, but yeah, so I think we're just having to absolutely make the most of every single second
at
the moment.
I think I saw something written down actually, like 7 to 11, you have your kids back.
Yeah.
You lose them and then they're back.
Oh,
and then they just turn into nightmares again.
Oh God, I'm dreading that bit. No, at the moment, they're just lovely. They're so lovely.
Well, Paige, so we know each other. Well, we're both authors. We yes. have a mutual friend in Karen Edwards,
yes.
who we both know from Heat Magazine, which we've both worked, actually. But really, I guess I found you on social media,
on
Twitter.
Right. Yeah.
For everyone who, I guess, doesn't know, the world of writing and the community of authors is so supportive. And I feel like I was fully embraced in that world when I started writing. So thank you, because you're a massive part of that.
Well, thank you, because it was you reading my books and tweeting about them and then suddenly sort of realising, oh my goodness, you know, this lovely person's got an amazing blog, you know, and she's telling people how, you know, how much she likes my books. So, yeah,
I really do,
That was really lovely.
Yeah, I just love them. But you know when I think there's I'm going to just totally fangirl all over you now. But you know when there's just, I know if I pick up one of your books, it's going to be amazing. So I like a good solid, I like to know that.
Well, you know, that absolutely goes the same. Like I respect you so much as a writer. I love your style of writing.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you very much. So Paige, What sort of mum did you think you were going to be?
I thought I'd probably be quite a firm but fair mum, a really loving mum. You know, I wanted to give a lot of time and attention to my kids. And I, you know, my mum was a stay-at-home mum, but, you know, my dad used to be a racing driver, so we'd be travelling all around the world. So she didn't really have a choice. She couldn't go out to work. She, you know, she brought us up.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be able to, I would have loved to have given my kids the same experience, you know, to be able to be around for them a lot more, which is kind of, you know, even as a young girl, I thought, author, what a great job, you know, I'd be able to like...
Really? You knew that young?
I did. I really knew, like, when I was really young, I wanted to write. And then when I was a little bit older, I sort of thought, right, what I'll do is I'll go and work for a magazine first.
You basically have done what you set out to do.
Yeah, it was very bizarre, yeah. But somewhere in the middle, I kind of got distracted with thinking about music and, you know, maybe sort of like writing songs, stuff like that. But yeah, that was just like a complete X Factor pipe dream. Not that the X Factor was around at the moment, but my dad was like those people you see on X Factor. He's like, you're amazing, darling. It's like, okay, no, I'm not amazing. I'm going to have to let that one go and just go back to the writing, which is, yeah.
But a part of that, did you sort of go, that would work really well with a family?
Absolutely. You know, I thought I'll go and become a journalist, and then when I, you know, have a family, I'll write books and I'll be able to write in amongst baby sleep times and them going to school. I just had this whole sort of plan mapped out. And that was from a really young age. So the fact that I'm actually doing that and the fact that it has worked out the way that I wanted it to, pretty much, more or less, obviously a few ups and downs. But yeah, I count my lucky stars. I feel it's a good job.
Do you feel like you are the mum that you thought you would be?
I kind of think I am. I mean, I give my kids a lot of love. See, my husband will say that I'm not strict enough. But
right.
I think compared to my friends, I am quite strict, you know. And, you know, he's more strict. So I think we sort of balance each other out, you know, quite well. But, I just love motherhood. I thought I would love motherhood. I had no idea how much I would love being a mum and how much I would love, you know, my children. I mean, that sort of those early days really kind of took me by surprise.
How did you find them?
It was so intense, you know, like, I mean, I remember writing this poem and I hadn't written poetry for quite a long time, like quite a few years. You know, I used to write loads of poems when I was a teenager, as you can imagine. And I just remember sort of about 5 days in, you know, you get the whole baby blues and everything. And I just wrote this really intense poem about how I thought you know, I couldn't go on living if anything happened to my baby. I just sort of thought, you know, the opening line of the poem is I could not go on living, you know. So it's quite intense, you know, too intense really in a way, you know. But that tempered itself. Certainly by the time number two came around, you know, that was actually quite a nice way of tempering it, I think, you know, because you have more love to give, you know, you sort of spread it out a little bit. It kind of calmed me down a little bit, you know, in the first 2.5 years. My son was kind of my life, you know. It was a bit, you know, full on.
Well, especially that first little section, I think it is, like you say, that word, intense.
Yeah.
And it's such, no matter how much, for me, I thought I was ready for motherhood, I was so shocked.
Yeah.
At that, the emotion, the fact that I wasn't going to know what I was doing, you know, it was all such a whirlwind.
It's quite scary, isn't it? Because, like, you know, we went and did NCT classes and 6 out of the 7 classes were all about childbirth. And then you get this one class, you know, it's like, hang on, is that all we're going to get? You know, to just teaching us how to put a nappy on. It's like, oh my God, you know, like, are you really going to throw this thing at me? How am I going to cope with this little... to be responsible for a little person. And, you know, sometimes I even still have dreams about it. In my dreams, I'm, you know, I've completely forgotten that I haven't changed a nappy or I haven't done something.
And still now.
It's anxiety. Yeah, it really chases me down. It's awful. I think it's part of being an author, having a terribly overreactive imagination. Like the amount of bad things I've imagined having to my kids, like on a regular basis, you know.
Really?
Yeah, it kills me.
Gosh. So we're having, so 1 to 2 was a bit of it was calming then. It kind of made things.
It did. It sort of, I think mentally it definitely, you know, like I say, the first 2.5 years, you know, my son was kind of my world. I completely doted on him. And then having a little girl brought into the mix as well, you know, just it did sort of just calm me a little bit. I don't know. You know, it was strange, you know, just it's hard to explain. But
do you think it's because you had a lot more confidence when the second one came along?
Definitely had more confidence for sure. And I don't know, you know, I remember once watching this episode of Wife Swap and this you know, woman had one child and she was saying, I don't want to have a second child because I don't have enough love to give to 2 children, you know, all of my love's going to him. And I did feel guilt, you know, and my, you know, last couple of months of pregnancy, I had this horrendous guilt, you know, thinking, oh, poor Indy, you know, how's he going to cope when another one comes along? I'm not going to be able to give him so much attention. But then in the last sort of, you know, as those weeks were creeping down, and I realised I was so knackered being heavily pregnant. The only thing I could do with him was like jigsaw puzzles because there was no way I was going to chase him around.
Poor Indy.
Yeah, completely. You know, it's just like, another jigsaw puzzle, darling. And, you know, and then I sort of started thinking, do you know what? This baby cannot come soon enough because I need another distraction. You know, he needs a friend to play with.
Oh, and do they get on now?
They get along really well. On the whole, obviously, there are arguments. You know, sometimes you're, you know, tearing your hair out. It's just like, just move away from each other. But on the whole, they get along. You know, he's going to have a little best friend for, you know, all of these formulative years.
It's,
you know, it's
someone
really
to protect.
Lovely. Yeah, someone to protect, someone to, you know, he's been wanting to get Minecraft for the last 4 years and we finally gave in. And then our daughter said, can I have Minecraft? And so, you know.
Oh, and then you'll have that. Oh, but she's going to get it earlier than I did.
I know. Well, that's exactly what happened. But then, of course, she got it. And now he bores her to tears by talking to her. He's got someone to talk about Minecraft to because we're not interested. We don't want to hear about it. You know, it's like, okay, what are you talking about? You know, he's like, I love it. I can talk to Ida about Minecraft, you know. So, yeah, they're good friends. Yeah, we're lucky.
Did you join lots of mum groups?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Oh, I used to go to this amazing, like, in fact, I wrote about it in my last book, funnily enough, you know, even though it's not set in the same place, but it was in North London. And this guy called Jeremy played the guitar and he was just so much fun. You know, he'd sort of bounce around, he'd like, you know, hang from the rafters like a monkey and he was so energetic and he'd play like all the, you know, sort of the Beatles and the Stones. All the mums are sitting there clapping along and listening and kids are just rapt, you know, running around sort of bumping into each other and crying and then just cheering up because bubbles, you know. It's like you get the bubbles down, you'd be like, oh my God, here we go, you know, head collisions. But that was my absolutely far and away favourite sort of mum thing to do. I didn't do as many mum things as I wish that I had time to because I was writing and that was one thing that had to take a sacrifice. You know, I just, when the baby slept, I had to write. You know, I couldn't.
Did you feel isolated in that way, just having to sort of step away from?
Yeah, I did a little bit, yeah. And certainly, you know, like when everybody else around me were having, they were having a maternity leave, you know, like a proper maternity leave. Everything was about them and the baby and, you know, even they could go for a nap if they wanted to or whatever. And I couldn't, you know, baby sleeps, I'm at my computer writing and that was, you know, that was just the way things were. But
so how long after Indy arrived did you get back to
your
desk?
It was 6 weeks after. And I had no intention of doing it like that. I had every intention of finishing that book before he came. And I just couldn't. I just, my head wasn't there. You know, I think maybe the expectation of motherhood, you know, it was quite frightening and daunting. I've also since discovered that I can only really write very well in autumn.
Really?
This, yeah, there's this really strange, you know, thing. And I only realised this about 2 years ago when my agent said to me, you know, if you can write a book in 3 months, then why don't you deliver it before the summer holidays? And so I thought, okay, I'm going to do that. And nope, I did not do it. And I sort of managed to get to this point. I just thought, I'm not going to deliver a book that I think is crap.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to deliver a book, you know, when I'm ready. And you know, and just came back down to September, October, November again. So that's kind of my thing I've discovered.
Yeah, I wonder if it's because the nights are drawing in and...
Yeah, there's definitely got to be something about that. And I think it just... I don't know, there's something a little bit oppressive about the air in summer. You know, I sort of find my head gets really foggy and...
Well, it's probably a nice time to be out and enjoying life.
Yeah, there's that too, for sure. And but also I think hay fever kind of affects me in a weird kind of way. Mm. You know, I don't know what the deal is with that. But, you know, it definitely sort of makes me feel a bit like my head's cotton wool. I can't think clearly. But certainly from November, from sort of September onwards, you know, I'm ready to get my head back down. And so Indy was born, like, you know, in the middle of September.
Right.
And I did have 6 weeks or so off. I think one of the best pieces of advice someone gave me was a friend of mine who had a baby like 4 months before. And she just said, don't stress. She said, little babies sleep a lot. You'll finish this book once he comes. And that was really kind of reassuring at the time because I was stressing out quite a lot, you know, thinking, am I ever going to meet this deadline?
And I know that you actually dumped the first lot of work that you
did. I did. See, I wrote those 50,000, but, you know, I did. And I just sort of thought, when I actually looked at it again 6 weeks later, I don't know, there was something about having him and him being there. And that just lifted all of that anxiety and all that stress. And it was just this, you know, amazing sort of world of motherhood. And I was just ready to get back to work. And I did. I shredded pretty much those first 50,000 words and started again. I ended up writing that book in sort of 2.5 months, you know, the entire thing.
Really?
With, you know, tiny baby.
See, we have our friend in common, Karen. She told me about you when I was writing. And I literally had this ideal, like idyllic image in my head of you being sat at your computer, Indy being in a bouncer, being rocked by your toe, you know, and you just writing away. And I thought that that was going to be me.
And was it not?
No, they only slept for half an hour at a time.
Oh,
both
no.
of them.
That is really unlucky.
Yeah,
that's
until
really
they got to about a year old. That's
really?
When, yeah, once they dumped the first the morning nap and it was just on the main one, then they started sleeping longer. But literally, you could set your alarm to it.
Seriously?
30 minutes and bing, they're awake.
That is really, really unlucky. My daughter was a bit like that. But my son, he was a good sleeper. He was a great sleeper in the daytime. He was horrendous at night, like really, really, really bad. And those first few weeks, I just felt like I was sort of this subhuman species. You know, he'd be awake for half the night and then I'd kind of like eventually get my sleep. And then he'd be up with my mum and my brother for the my husband for the first few weeks. I've still got baby brain now. and I just sort of, I'd kind of like eventually come and says like 12 o'clock in the day. And I just felt like this weird kind of alien sort of species, like I wasn't living on the same timeline. I was alone in the night with a baby and, you know, the rest of the day I was just... You know, eventually just had to shelve that and get up with the baby and, you know, just deal with the night time.
It's crazy that it's that night that I think sleep, you don't really realise how important it is.
Yeah, and it's lonely because you're there by yourself. There's no sort of distractions. I mean, I was watching like the first 5 series of House, I think, on my laptop.
But you get to the point where you're like, oh no, they've stopped feeding, but I really want to finish this episode.
Absolutely. You know, there was something really magical about that time too. It was just me and my son in his room because I would go to his room.
Yeah.
And sit there and just sort of, you know, watch some telly second time around, in the bed, you know, feed the baby, back in her cot, don't do a change. Because I used to change him in the night.
Same.
I didn't realise until friends told me that, no, you don't change a baby in the night time, you know, like just change him in the morning.
Well, I think the midwife said to me that because Buzz was smaller, he needed to have that feed. So if you woke up, to get him to have the other boob, change him but yeah, Buddy was literally... quick. He'd feed for 15 minutes and go straight back to sleep.
Brilliant.
Was not bothered by a wet nappy. He was just like, I'm tired, I'm done.
Yeah, and you have to just like make it as quick as possible because you need to be awake for the other one in the morning.
Exactly.
You know, you can't just like sleep when baby sleeps.
I just can't get my head around, Paige, this having a newborn and starting to write a book, like rewriting it. But I guess because you had two pressures, the deadline, book deadlines, which are, I mean... They are serious.
Mine got moved by a month. You know, my editor just said, yeah, how long do you need? I think maybe another month. You know, I was supposed to deliver at the end of Christmas. She's like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. But having those two, a baby arriving and a book deadline, the pressure must have just been so overwhelming. But then I guess as soon as Indy arrived, that whole pressure and that expectation, that worry of what it's going to be like, suddenly living in it, must have made things a little bit easier.
Absolutely. But I just think as well, you know, when you have a child, you just don't sweat the small stuff. You know, you know, that's the most important thing. And, you know, I remember sort of, you know, I used to get very stressed when I worked, you know, at a magazine. I just sort of used to feel a bit kind of stressed about little things. And I'd be all anxious and I'd be having sleepless nights. Like, no, I just wouldn't have cared about any of that stuff once I had a baby, you know, because that's the important, you know, that's suddenly all of your priorities change and everything comes into perspective. And so I don't remember being massively stressed. I think I was maybe sort of a little bit sorry for myself at times that I wasn't able to just
eat cake with them
exactly. You know, like, you know, I'd have my NCT friends, you know, who swiftly became a really good support network going off for cake and coffee. It's like, I can't, I've got to go, right, you know. And so yeah, I had to do that. But you know, how lucky am I?
I guess the flip side though of what we do is that when that book's in, you get a nice chunk of time, hopefully, to kind of start dreaming up the next thing. But you kind of can have a little bit of a break.
Yeah. And, you know, and at the end of the day, I have found over the last 10 years that I do write most of my books in those last 3 months. So, you know, over the years, I've become less stressed about it, sometimes wrongfully so, because...
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves
without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I've been sort of like, oh my God, why didn't I start this 6 months ago? Massively stressed, you know, having this week of writer's block, you know, 2 weeks before the book's due in. And it's like, what am I doing? But yeah, no, we're really lucky in that respect. And I remember, you know, sort of after that first year, half or most of the maternity group, you know, they were going back to work. And I just remember one of my friends who didn't go back, who's the friend that I'm closest with, who, you know, my son sort of, you know, her daughter is his girlfriend. Aww. He still talks about it, you know. And we were sitting in our back garden in London in a small sort of terraced house garden with our feet in a paddling pool while the kids slipped down them, drinking Pims in the middle of the day. And we're just looking at each other. It's like, oh my God, we're so lucky. So yeah, it was awesome.
Swings and roundabouts.
It does, yeah. So I'm not complaining, but yeah, I mean, obviously there were times when I would have loved to have just had a maternity leave and had nothing to think about except for my little tiny bundle of joy and sometimes despair.
And your mum, did your mum fly over from Australia?
She did, yeah.
How long for?
My mum and dad were both with us for the first 3 weeks, and then they went off to Portugal for a couple of weeks, and then they came back again. And that was kind of weird, because for those first 3 weeks, I was so dependent on my mum, mm-hmm. and I was really, really struggling with breastfeeding. Like, it was, you know, I think the worst thing anyone had ever told me is, if it hurts, you're not doing it right. And that is just such mm-hmm. a pile of BS, because, you know, everybody's got different skin. You know, some people are more sensitive than others. And you see all these images of this little tiny baby's, you know, this little sort of baby, their mouth, this big wide mouth clamping onto a boob, you know. It's like, no, little babies have got teeny tiny mouths. It doesn't look like that till they're about 3 months old. And then you can, like, tell me if I'm doing it right. And it just hurt so much. I remember my mum sort of getting up with me in the night. And in fact, we both slept downstairs in the living room together, just so she, you know, had the moral support of the middle of the night feeds for the first couple of weeks. It was just so, you know, we're about three nights in a row, you know, she'd just sort of get up with me at 3 a.m. and we'd just watch some telly together while I was feeding and sort of like trying to latch on with this knife being stabbed into my back, which is what it felt like. And I think the second time around, just, it hurt just as much, which is mm-hmm. why, you know, I knew I was doing it right, because obviously I've had experience now, mm-hmm. and it hurt just as much. But mentally, I was just on a different, you know, different plane, because I knew I was doing it right. And so I wasn't stressed about that. The second time around, I just took some flipping ibuprofen, you know? Anything just to help you get through, you know. So it was amazing having my mum and dad around, you know, for those first few weeks. But like I said, I did feel very, very sort of dependent on my mum, I think, for that support. And when she went away, you know, I got this amazing independence. Mm-hmm. And when she came back again, I actually, like, we were locking horns a bit.
Because, really?
Yeah, it was a bit strange, you know, because I felt so, so connected to Indy in those weeks when she hadn't been there. I really felt like I knew, you know, what he needed and what he wanted, and I felt really connected. And then when she came back again, I sort of, like, felt like, oh, you know, she was like, he needs a feed, or he needs this, or he needs that. And I'm like, oh, and I couldn't tell what he needed, because there were too many people interfering. So I sort of became a bit insular, you know, after that. I sort of, like, wanted to just, you know, do it myself and, you know, have that experience.
I totally understand that, though. It's so funny, isn't it, how you can go from one extreme to the other.
Yeah.
I literally was not listening to Buzz at all when he cried. First of all, I was just like, oh, the cries sound the same. I can't tell the difference. But because of the feeding, I was so, you know, hell-bent on getting that right.
Yeah.
And it took a long time. It took me 3 months to kind of go, now we're definitely falling into it.
My NCT teacher said to us, you know, because obviously I've got absolutely no issues. You know, if people, whatever is right for mum, I think, you know, I absolutely agree. You know, if you're happy, then you're the most important person, because you're, you know, that will filter down to your mm-hmm. baby. So you just have to do what's right for you. But I knew I was going to breastfeed, and mm-hmm. I knew I would persist no matter what. So, you know, but the NCT teacher said to me, she said to all of us, please, please, please just persist for 2 weeks. She said, after that, you can do whatever you like. You know, you can change, but, you know, that those 2 weeks, it's a, you know, really great gift you can give your baby. And then after that, you've got options. So in my head, I sort of thought to myself, just got to get to that 2 week mark and then it's going to become easier. And I actually crooked my neck like on that sort of the day before the 2 weeks were up and I had to take paracetamol and ibuprofen for that. and I thought, and then it suddenly became easier, this breastfeeding. I was so happy. And so 2 days later, when I wasn't taking any drugs and it absolutely excruciated. I mean, I was in so many floods of tears. I couldn't believe how painful it still was. And eventually my friend, you know, a really good old friend of mine in Australia, she said to me, it's going to be at least 10 weeks, you know, possibly like 3 months before you actually get, you know, and I mean, that was a bit of a shock, but I kind of, you know, in a way, just wish I'd known that at the beginning, you know.
See, I went to a wedding when Buzz was 10 weeks old and two of my other friends who had babies around the same time. And I can remember saying something like, you know, people say that it stops hurting, but it doesn't, does it?
No,
and
their faces
just were like, yeah. Yeah, it does stop hurting.
Well, see, because it's different. Like,
yeah, exactly.
But it's different for everybody. And, you know, one of the midwives, you know, who came around to visit, she said to me, you know, she said, you know, pinch your skin. Does that hurt? And I'm like, yeah. And she said, well, you know, somebody else, like you do that to them. It doesn't hurt, you know, not in the slightest. And and I do clearly have got quite sensitive skin. I think everybody, you know, is just different. And, you know, I've sort of warned other people how much it hurts. And they've been like, no, it's been absolutely fine.
Yeah, just like, exactly. I know. But I can remember having a friend of mine message and said, just so you know, when you start feeding, I always kick my heels in the back of my chair and clench my butt a bit. And I thought, what is she going on about? And it's only when I started feeding, I was like, totally get it. Literally clench my butt, my jaw, you know, just get it. I'll get that first little bit. And then
that's right. It's the latching on, isn't it? That really, really hurts. But I couldn't have anyone in the room with me. I mean, apart from my mum in the night, because if anybody saw how much pain I was in, you know what it's like. Yeah. If somebody gives you sympathy, then you feel so much more sorry for yourself. So I was like, I did not want anybody to see. And so there was no way I was going to be able to breastfeed in public, like for the several weeks. I mean, I was, you know, rooted to the house and with like 2 hour windows, you know, going out and about.
Because the second time around, I was so different.
Yeah, well, mentally I was different, but it still hurt. Yeah. Did it hurt for you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I was also in a different place when it came to feeding in public.
Right.
But at the point where, you know, when you're a bit too, you're like, your boobs are full because you're not on the right.
Slipping off.
that bit of slip and slide down there. But because you're not in a rhythm yet, you don't know what's happening. And I remember being out for lunch with mates and, you know, Buddy needed a feed. So I was like, that's fine. I can do it in public nowadays. I'm fine. I'm experienced. And literally, my boob just shot on a milk, just shot across the table and nearly hit a friend's husband. It was the most embarrassing thing.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Dear. But we all go through it.
We
you
do.
Know.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I stuck to it, really.
Yeah, me too. And like layering, that was another thing like for feeding in public. Like such a good idea to wear two tops. You can put one down, one up.
Yeah.
And then you just have this tiny little bit of skin exposed, you know, apart from the fact when they suddenly pull off and like say milk goes shooting across the table. But that was, you know, because I just like this idea of like pulling down my top and having this enormous sort of Babylon on display. It was just mortifying, you know, I really didn't feel comfortable.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It's each their own.
Yeah,
because some people will be like, oh, whatever, it's my baby. It's a natural thing.
Yeah.
But for me, like for me to be comfortable, and I do think it's important what makes the mum comfortable as well as the baby.
Yeah.
For me, I did want a little bit. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So how did you feel when your mum left and went back to Australia?
She went back to Portugal. She just went over to Portugal. We've got a place over there. And so they went there just for a couple of weeks. So that was okay because I knew she was coming back.
Yeah.
When she went back to Australia that first time, I can't really remember. I mean, I must have felt sad and, you know, the idea of, you know, them being so far away. But also I think just having that independence as well, you know, it's very empowering actually when you are, you know, my husband was out to work. So it was just me and my son and obviously I was writing at the same time. And I think that did give me real confidence to be doing that by myself. So maybe it wasn't quite as bad as I thought it would be. That's right. Sorry, I've just remembered. We went to Australia when he was 3 months old. So I don't think that's...
Bye, Mum and Dad, we're coming.
Exactly. I think that's probably why I don't remember being that upset. We went for like 4 weeks, you know.
Oh,
so
amazing.
Yeah. So you know, I wasn't too sad about losing her because I knew I was going to see her again, you know, sort of like later that same year. So yeah, traveling with a newborn.
How was that?
Not too bad because he was. You know, 3 months old, so he was the right sort of size to sleep in the carry cot, you know, so it wasn't too bad. Travelling with when you're 7.5 months pregnant with a 2-year-old, on the other hand, was like the worst flight of my life.
No, were you on your own?
Oh my God, I was on my own. Indy would not sleep. He slept on the plane when I didn't want him to. He didn't sleep on the plane. And then when we had like a 6-hour stopover in Singapore when I couldn't sleep, because I'm like having to walk around an airport for 6 hours, he slept then. Then we get on the next flight when I've been awake like for almost 24 hours. And he wouldn't sleep. And I just, oh my God, I'd never wanted to lie on my side so much in my life. Had this enormous bump, you know, I've got this toddler kind of kicking me, you know. Oh, it was awful. It's not something I ever want to repeat. Now they're good because they're 7 and 10. They'll sit there, they'll watch movies. And then they want to stretch out. And, you know, as a mum, you do anything you possibly can to make your kids comfortable. So I'll like be sitting like with like the corner of my bum on the seat so they can both like stretch out. Still no sleep whatsoever, you know.
Oh,
get to Australia and hand them over.
Is it because your in-laws are up north as well, aren't they?
Yes.
So is it you don't have either sets of parents
don't. Yeah.
What do you do for that support?
I don't really have any. I mean, now they're both in school, but you know, when they were younger, it was tough. Like, we didn't get a babysitter. Part of that's me being a complete martyr because I just sort of thought, nobody else can put my baby to bed apart from me. But, you know, we didn't get a babysitter, I don't think, for like the first sort of 2-3 years of the kids' lives, you know, because we just didn't feel like anybody else would be able to do it. You know, bedtimes was such a nightmare. So apart from, you know, parents, if they were coming to stay, then, you know, they'd look after the kids and we'd go and see a movie. But I used to go to a lot of mum and baby screenings. You know, that was when I'd get my movie fix. You know, I'd be taking the baby with me. But the support thing was, you know, that was challenging.
When you were writing them, were you literally writing in nap times and when they went to bed at night?
I didn't write even right when they went to bed at night. I was far too knackered for that.
Really?
I don't know how you do that. I still don't know how you do that.
Just got to keep going. Oh, don't think about it.
My God, honestly.
Don't say that. I'll be going there tonight going, Paige says she doesn't know how to do this. And Paige is supermum. I don't know what to do.
No, I'm definitely not. I think you're a supermum around here. No, I know. My brain is mush by the time nighttime comes around. I just want to sit in front of the telly and completely switch off. Like, obviously, when I'm really approaching a deadline, or if I'm really, really into a chapter and I'm desperately wanting to get back to it, then I'll kind of like go and sit down and write. But, you know, I write. Now it's easy. They're both in school, which is why I stupidly decide I can write 2 books a year because I'd have 3 times the amount of hours to write them in. That was a little bit challenging.
And how do you juggle it now? Do you literally do all the writing in when they're at school?
Yeah. They go off to school in the morning. And yeah, they come home at 3 and that's when I stop. So I.
And does that give you does that make you really productive in that time?
I mean,
you are
I
can't imagine you ever like dwindling away hours on social media or anything.
Oh, I still do though. I mean, really? It's the catching up. It's the Monday. And actually sometimes I find that quite depressing because if I haven't managed to stay on top of it for the last few days and on a Monday, you know, I'm quite anal. I just want to get like that job out the way before I can start writing. And sometimes I won't even start writing till 2 o'clock. And then suddenly I've got like an hour to write. And I feel really just so unproductive and really stressed, you know. And because I work from home as well, there's always something that needs to be done, like rooms that need to be cleaned or housework and laundry, you know, it just all piles up. And, you know, suddenly I've barely done anything. And I find that really hard. Like that knocks me mentally. It sort of knocks my, you know, my mojo out of shape.
Do you have like a big support network now in terms of friends? Like, because I know that you and like, obviously Ali Harris are really close. I think having mummy friends are very different to having normal friends that don't have children.
Yeah, they are. And most of my friends are mummy friends. Like almost all of my friends have got kids of their own. I missed my friends when we moved away from London 5 years ago because obviously I had like a really good sort of support network of baby friends, you know, and we all had similar aged kids and we used to catch up regularly. You know, now, you know, everybody's kids are slightly different ages.
Yeah.
It's still something. If you go out with someone who doesn't have a child, then it's kind of a little bit difficult because you do want to talk about your kid a little bit. You know, you want to sort of talk about what you're, you know, finding difficult or, you know, sort of a funny thing that happened. And you used to think, I'm boring you to tears, aren't I?
Not on this podcast. It's all very, very welcome. So have you got any advice for mums who are going from 1 to 2?
I think don't worry about the guilt. If you are feeling any sort of guilt, I think giving them a sibling is like the best present you can ever give them. You know, they really, and seeing them together for the first time, you know, my son walked in and and saw my baby daughter, and she just like, oh my God, it's the most special moment, most special memory, you know. Luckily, we got it on film. So we look
and because
it
you were worried about how Indy would react.
Of course, yeah.
You know, how was that moment in reality?
Oh, I mean, he was ever so good. Like, he would come into our bedroom first thing in the morning, lie on the bed, open his arms, say, give the baby to me. And that would be the first thing he'd want. So we were very lucky that he didn't seem to be jealous, but we were careful too. We didn't give Ida too much attention in front of him, you know, didn't sort of, you know, it still made him feel like he was our number one, you know, even though obviously they're very equal, you know, especially nowadays. And in fact, she's the one who gets jealous of him, you know, funnily enough. She sort of like, you know, she'd come into bed when she was old enough, she'd be like, my mummy, and like grab hold of me and sort of, you know, wouldn't want Indy to kind of, you know, he got a bit sort of nudged out in a way, which is something I definitely feel guilty about. But, you know, now they're just, you know, they're just really equal and they, you know, just get along really, really well. So. Yeah. You know, they're each other's best mates.
It's hard to remember a time when there was just one.
No, that's so true. But the weirdest thing is trying to remember a time when you didn't have any. It's like, oh my God, that was before Indy. It's like, who was that person, you know?
So, Paige, I ask everyone to complete three sentences. So, being a mum means?
Being a mum means joy, absolutely. Completion, like you have the sense of kind of completeness. And family, you know, just it's family. Like, and for me, you know, even though my family live on the other side of the world in Australia, you know, I remember my mum saying to me, she said, you know, when you have a child of your own, you'll miss us less because everything will revolve around your family. And she was right. You know, home is where the heart is and the heart is where your family is and your children. And, you know, I've definitely feel much more complete and settled here in England now that we've got a little sort of family unit of our own, you know, so it means everything to me.
Since having children, I
don't sweat the small stuff.
I like that.
Definitely not.
And I'm happy when?
When my kids are laughing. There is nothing that makes me happier than seeing them laugh when they like just lose themselves and they're just like in hysterics. Like it is just, I mean, my husband and I would just look at each other and just laugh our heads off too. Like we're just full of joy seeing that lovely, lovely, lovely little sight.
Well, Paige, thank you so much for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure to just chat. It's been so nice in real life, not just on the Twitter.
Yay. Well, thank you so much for asking me.
No, at all. Thank you.
Thanks.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.